You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hi folks, today I want us to talk about love, romance, intimacy, and sex, and I want us to be honest about it. Welcome to Cult from the UBC, the cultural radio show from your favorite campus newspaper. It's Thursday, February 15th, 2018. I'm your host, Eve O'Day, a staff writer at the UBC. This show is broadcasted from CITR 101.9 FM, located on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Musqueam people. We have a special episode this week. The UBC's annual Valentine's Sex Issue is out. This year, the theme is honesty, so we thought we'd dive in seriously and honestly about love, intimacy, and romance. First up, we have an interview with Sam McCabe and Kate Colabrander, two of the editors coordinating the issue. They'll be talking to us about the issue, what to expect, and how they came up with this year's theme. And we'll have a segment called TBH, or To Be Honest. A panel of UBC staff will speak honestly about the greatest insights they've gleaned from their human experiences, or just rant into the void. Also, we have three fire essays and poems from the issue, read by their writers, sprinkled all over the episode. Quick content warning, we talk about a lot in this episode. We talk about consent to body image to sexual health. Some of these topics that we talk about in this episode might be disturbing or offensive to some. If you don't want to listen to any of that, you can totally tune out now. You still there? All right, here's the show.
Hey folks, I am Olamide Olanion, a staff writer at the UBC. So the UBC's annual sex issue is on stands today. There's a lot of hot, spicy stuff in there, and there's also like a lot of information and also like a lot of raw, unadulterated honesty. So in the studio with me today are the two editors leading the issue. We have video editor Kate Colenbrander.
Hello.
And news editor Sam McCabe.
Hi.
Yeah, so they'll be acting as our kind of wise guides, and will be giving us an intro to the issue. So first of all, we'll just start off, Sam. So you coordinated this last year, right, with Josh Medikoff, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, what tends to draw you to the annual sex issue every single year?
I don't know. I guess it's that as news editor, a lot of my job is like obviously very factual and very boring to some extent. And so with the sex issue, it's just such a great opportunity to go like hands deep in like a super creative, passionate project. And I really like how we veered towards like an open call for submissions towards students, because I think it's so important to bring all those voices in there. So I think it's both like the reason behind it and the work we produce, but then also just the chance to like go super hard into one big creative project.
Cool. Why the theme? This is for both of you. Like, honesty, why did this one speak out to you in particular?
I can take this first. For me, at least, something that I really wanted to advocate when we were doing our brainstorming session is to try our hardest to veer away from a kind of protest or radical element that I think a lot of student papers can venture towards when they go for their sex issue, just kind of meaning like leaning into this like, oh, isn't this
risque?
Yeah, exactly. Trying to like emphasize it, that they know what they're doing by this, and they know that they're being a little bit like
saucy.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I think is one of the most damaging things about talking about sex in our culture, is this inherent association with shame, and that to be acknowledging it is something radical. And I wanted to kind of take it in a different direction of going more with the honest element of it, to try to really embrace all the different facets of sex and encourage openness, not just because it's a sex issue, but rather encourage openness just because, like, this is just something that I feel like most people aren't honest about because there's this implication of, like, what would you say?
Just this implication of, like, that it has, that any talking about sex has to be performative in some sense, or has to be your brand.
Exactly.
We just wanted people to be completely frank. And I think what worked super well with the theme last year, which was intimacy, was that it was so broad that it just invited this huge mix of submissions. So we knew we wanted to do that again this year, as Kate was saying, and just get a huge variety of stuff in. And, like, definitely people did not disappoint. So, yeah, we wanted to give people some guidance with the theme, but it's at the same time, the whole point of the theme was honesty, so we wanted to keep it broad enough that people felt they could touch on literally anything and it might fall under it. We just wanted people to be upfront.
Cool. So why is this important? Like, why are we having this conversation right now? Why does the conversation matter at all?
I think Kate really did a good job explaining this just now, but especially in this, like, age of, especially with our generation, you're either not having enough sex or you're having too much sex, and there's so many stereotypes and stigmas and stuff like that. We wanted to achieve this body of work that really captured a diversity and a spectrum of genders and sexualities and races and ethnicities and opinions and values that maybe students wouldn't have a chance to discuss or read about otherwise, and especially not stuff that's been written by other students. Like, if the whole point of the UBC as the campus newspaper is to make people feel closer together, I feel like this is the epitome of that, is, like, reading what your peers think, like, their innermost, like, feelings and projections and thoughts, and feeling like maybe you can relate to it in some way, or maybe you learn something new.
Yeah, I would say that fundamentally how we talk about sex needs to change, that it's not enough to just do it anymore. I think at one point it was just necessary to just talk about it, to just try to use a platform like the UBC,
yeah,
and to talk about something that nobody was talking about, or it wasn't really allowed or taboo. But I think we're kind of past the point in culture.
Next step.
Where, yeah, exactly, where it's just, we just need to, like, open up a platform to just be able to talk about sex. I think that's kind of become a bigger and more normalized part of our culture. So rather than just allowing us to talk about it in general, we need to kind of dive into the different facets of it and really, like, unpack how we talk about it, not just allow us to be able to talk about it, because that's not, like, special anymore. And I don't really think that's really adding to the conversation.
Snapping fingers, fire.
Yeah.
Nice. Do you want to say something as well?
I'm going to drop this mic.
I was just going to say, like, it's kind of...
Pick it back up.
Please
again.
Don't drop the mic.
Yeah, no, it's expensive. This is what happens when you give me a handheld mic.
She throws it. I was just going to say that it's kind of the equivalent of almost sex education and how that's changed and morphed, I feel like, where originally there was none. And then in schools, you got, like, this basic, like, what is sex? How do you protect yourself? How do you put on a condom? And everyone was like, snaps for that. That's amazing. And now if that's what students are getting, we're like, what the hell? Like, that's not diverse. That's not inclusive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just kind of going past, like, the very basic, like, oh, let's talk about sex, and, like, actually striving to have full conversations about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, thank you. So what do we expect from this year's issue? What kind of content are we expecting to come out?
Honestly, a little bit of everything. You've got your longer personal essays. You've got some short mini essays if you just want to do some skim reading. We have our soapbox, which I really love, which is basically just people shouting into the void about something that they feel unheard about or passionate about. And then we also have unsolicited advice columns, which we did in last year's issue, which went over really well. And then we have a really great resources page for not just your typical Wellness Center resources, but also some kinky stuff.
Thank you. What about, like, design and inspiration? Or, I mean, Kate, do you want to add something to that?
But... Yeah, well... Sam and I really collaborated with the photos. I took a majority of them, but it was...
A large majority.
But I kind of, as we were thinking of it, we really wanted to go, again, reject this tendency towards a kind of laziness with just being explicit. I think when somebody allows you to photograph them in pretty vulnerable positions, we have a lot of people in their underwear, some people nude, some people fully clothed, but just with their partners, which I think is still vulnerable. I think you have some sort of responsibility to them to have a purpose for why you're doing it. And I don't think that purpose is just like, just to show that you can, just to kind of push the boundaries or push the limits. So we kind of went with the colors and the fabrics, this idea of a little bit of like a modern renaissance. I think we wanted to celebrate the form in that way that you see a lot of renaissance painters and that kind of style of just really exploring the human body for what it is rather than just like parts of it.
We also do not have the budget for a professional Photoshop editor, so nothing's retouched.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess that, like, isn't necessarily implied, but, yeah, so we just wanted to kind of go with as candid as we could. Some of them are posed, some of them aren't. We just wanted this idea of honesty to be carried through into the simplicity of I think a lot of our visuals. So we really wanted to go with this kind of like minimalist renaissance vibe. It's a hard thing to describe because I've tried to
modern renaissance.
Yeah.
There we go.
I've tried to describe this to a few people and they're like, okay, cool. But like certain things, I think, for example, like our cover even.
I love our cover so much.
What I love about it is that it's very easy to kind of take something like a woman in her underwear and make the only message that you're sending is sexual. But something I tried to do here is just like capture undressing or dressing, it could be either, in a form kind of neutral, that certain things, the problem with how we're viewing them is that we're viewing them as inherently sexual, but somebody in their underwear, somebody undressing, it doesn't necessarily have to be that, that sex and sexuality doesn't have to necessarily imply, or even intimacy doesn't necessarily have to imply the actual act of sex. There's so many other facets to it. And I think that's where we wanted to go with the visuals, is just kind of like celebrating the form rather than just exploiting it.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at the issue, it's very cohesive. Like, we wanted to do something that you could flip through color-wise, form-wise, like the directions of the shots and the inspiration all feels, and we have some lovely illustrations in there too by Aiken Lau. It all feels just very like together, like one body of work, which we really wanted because we don't really get to do that in the regular newspaper because you're shooting per article.
Okay, so I know that the UBC has kind of gotten some criticism like a few years back about their annual sex issue, right? Could you kind of talk a little bit about that and how the UBC has taken that into account for this year?
I think that being a group of students, and we're not always, the UBC isn't always going to be like the perfect crosshair cut of like campus diversity. So I always just think it's so important to be going into projects like these with a mindset of inclusivity on such like an intersectional perspective. I wasn't around, this sounds like a defense thing, this is not a defense thing, but I wasn't around a couple years ago, but I believe it was just kind of like not being conducive to like the thoughts of like the gender and sexuality spectrum. And I love, my favorite part about the fact that we moved to an open call for submissions from students is that we're not like seeking out those perspectives, they just come to us and we can give them a platform to be represented.
Yeah, I think something that we really tried to emphasize both last year and this year was trying to be as gender neutral as we could with everything that wasn't like a personal essay, obviously. I think something that we might not think about can clearly be kind of very damaging and isolating to somebody that's reading it. So I think all we need to do is just make an active effort, like Sam was saying, of intersectionality. I think, yeah, we really tried to lean on the deeply personal with all of these, which I think kind of takes that out, is that as soon as you're not trying to make these overarching statements or classifications about something as diverse as sex and like the experience of sex, that's how you kind of avoid this kind of rhetoric of like heteronormativity or gender normativity or just kind of any kind of perpetuating of stereotypes, expectations. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. We wanted to really be like descriptive, not prescriptive. Mm. And I think that was also a reason why we cut the survey from a couple years ago because no offense to our reader population, but y'all are not good at filling out surveys. We don't get good response. They're not representative. We would just rather put in some like great comment from like actual students and fill those pages that way instead.
Awesome. Thanks. So both of you asked this really amazing question to me when we were shooting the promo video. And I wanted to kind of just send it back to you or your way because it's so genius. What's something you wish people would include in conversations about sex?
Okay. I have a few things. I really love this question because I wasn't really fully sure of my answer before I started asking people.
Yeah, we actually had conversations about like, what would you say?
Yeah. But something that I really wanted to emphasize is just like, I don't think we talk enough about the expectations that lie within the act. I think we talk a lot about like the expectations socially, but we don't really talk about the like intimate expectations, unspoken expectations between you and your partner. I think I've experienced a lot where it seems like sex is just this like switch over, and especially if it's not necessarily with somebody that you know very well or that you're extremely intimate and personal with, there's kind of this expectation of this bubble that sex is in, that to break away from that, to acknowledge what's happening, to laugh at a sound, to kind of adjust your positioning, to instruct your partner, kind of breaks that, and that's unsexy in a way. And I think that just kind of goes with how we talk about sex a lot, is it's just like surrounded in these, we don't really talk about things that we're unsure about or things that we're necessarily uncomfortable about, even with friends. I find it's kind of like, oh my gosh, did you have sex with him? And then that's like it's a yes or a no thing, or it's just kind of like, oh, how was it? Conversations about sex really exist in kind of like dichotomies of like, did it happen? Was it good? Did you come? All these things that like, there's so much more to it that I just think communication, I think that came up a lot also with the answers that we got.
Yeah.
That,
and it came up in the panel as well.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
It's just everybody kind of wants to talk more about it, but not necessarily in the way that we may think. I think because so long it's been taboo, people think that communication about sex, again, just implies like being explicit about it, but that's not necessarily true. Like, it's literally just being like, sometimes when you're
having sex,
sometimes when you're having sex, your bodies move in a weird way and it makes a fart noise and nobody wants to acknowledge it, but you can't just like continue on after that. I don't know. I just think, I think we really need to redefine what an openness and honesty, about sex is.
I'm really curious as to what I would have said if I hadn't known the question and then been asked this in front of a camera.
Oh, yeah, I would not have been in any way this eloquent or other people said.
But I'm also just
shocked.
Curious as to what the first thing that came to my mind was. But something I think about a lot is how this, and this is very similar, but how, like, for a lot of like sexual acts or whatever, it's again that dichotomy of like yes or like have you done this thing or haven't you. And I think the best part of sex is like the exploration of getting into something new, not after you've done it 100 times and then you can tell your friends like, oh yeah, you want advice on this, I'll give you advice. It's like actually like trying stuff out and like doing different stuff and like finding pleasure and like redefining that for yourself over and over. And so I just wish more conversations would center around that process and not just the before and the after.
And the variety of it. Like people, I think when you talk about especially experience, people think that you just kind of like cross the threshold and that means that you are going to do it every time or you're ready to do it every time. But like it's okay for your kind of sexual experience, your expectations, your expectations you put on your partner, on yourself, change drastically from person to person, from week to week. I think there are a lot of dangerous conversations that we have about, like, how many times a week do you want to have sex? And it's just, like, this definitive answer. Yeah. But, like, some weeks, zero. Some weeks, 15. Like, it really... we talk about it in these definitive ways that's just unnecessary to kind of trap ourselves in. And I think that's the problem, is that I feel like too many conversations about sex kind of, like, trap you in these commitments to whether you want to have a lot of it, want to have a little bit, want to have it with one person, want to have it with multiple people, want to do this thing, want to do this thing in bed, are comfortable with this thing. It's like, that can literally change in a second.
That's such a... Yeah, I really... This is just a quick one, but I really wish we talked more about how different sex with different partners is and how different you are during sex with different partners. It's not just that you're sleeping with different people. It's that the entire experience is different. Mm-hmm. It's not like a set thing. So I just wish, instead of being like, was it good, was it bad? It's so you can't even classify it like that because it's so different. So I just wish we talked about that more.
Sweet. Okay, so we're just going to wrap up. Do you guys, have the floor? Do you have any insights, observations, comments before you head out?
Well, something that stuck out to me when I was thinking about this and even just here today is that sex is really as important to you or as big of a deal as you make it. And that doesn't necessarily mean like it can't be a big deal, but it's really, that's the thing. It is how you define it from person to person, from time to time, with other people, whether you want to have it or not, is such a deeply personal thing that can be talked about, cannot be talked about, but it's really what you make of it. I think even the term sex can be very, very, very limiting. It's so diverse. There's so many varieties of it and how you experience it and sexuality, and like those don't necessarily cross over at any point. I just think it's so important to be honest with yourself when you're talking about it with other people or when you're thinking about it with yourself. It can be as big of a deal as you want it to be. It can be as insignificant as you want it to be, but as long as that's something that you decide for yourself.
Yeah, 100%. We've just both been talking about this so much, but we're just both so grateful to have gotten a chance to work on this issue and really put our passion for this topic and opening up this conversation. I hope that this issue encourages people to define their boundaries and accept their boundaries and maybe play with their boundaries. My dream would be that somebody just grabs a cup of coffee and like sits down and reads this cover to cover, because it truly is like a whole piece.
Reading week's coming up.
We're just both really psyched about how this turned out, and we really hope everyone likes it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
That was news editor Sam McCabe and video editor Kate Colabrander. They're both leading the charge with this year's sex issue. You can find the issue on stands around UBC today. Coming up, we're going to have readings of essays and poems from the sex issue by the writers who wrote them. Right now, a poem.
Right now, we'll have a poem reading by Emma Hicks called "But Everyone Who Has Called Me Beautiful Has Left and Not Come Back."
I grew up in a family of all girls who prioritized being thin and pretty, and when a hair fell out of place, our dad would tuck it behind our ears, and when the belts around our waists loosened, our mum would ask why and say, "It's not okay to be okay. It's okay to be the best." But in a family of all girls, you can't always be the best, so I found what I was good at, which was counting my ribs and the knobs in my spine, and I would stand naked in front of my mirror and trace the grooves up and down until I could slide my fingers in between them. I did the same with my hip bones, watching them widen as I grew, keeping them prominent so they were visible through my jeans, and it wasn't till I was 18 and someone asked me if I was okay that I realized I might not be. And every person who I let inside would tell me that I was beautiful, so I never changed except to try harder and be better and be the best so I could please them. And please them I did. But I found myself alone, counting, like I've done since I was 11, feeling the familiar bumps and the smooth scars that coat my skin. So I tuck my hair behind my ears and tighten my belt around my waist and tell myself everything will be okay, even if I'm not.
That was Emma Hicks reading her poem, "But Everyone Who Has Called Me Beautiful Has Left and Not Come Back." We'll be back after these PSAs.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Ever used or wanted to use a community lending library, collective workshop, or bike co-op? Come out to Making Space, Questioning Power and Privilege in Makerspaces on Wednesday, November 29th in the Mount Pleasant Neighborhood House from 5 to 8 p.m. to examine how power and privilege shows up in makerspaces and explore strategies that support more inclusive and equitable initiatives. Go to diversityandmakerspaces.eventbrite.ca to register for this event, and there'll be free food.
Robots need love too.
This is Dan Mangan, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver and surrounding university areas.
They want to be loved by robots, need love.
Born out of an initiative to give more voice to local women artists and musicians, Mixtapes is a Vancouver-based biannual mixtape featuring women-identified musicians and sound artists from the Pacific Northwest. The Spring 2018 edition will be coming out on May 10th, with all proceeds going to the Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter. Women-identified artists are invited to send their submissions to btchtapes@gmail.com. The release fundraiser will be held on May 10th at the Redgate Review Stage, featuring artists selected for this edition of the cassette.
You're listening to Cult at the UBC, a culture show from the campus newspaper at the University of British Columbia. We're broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam territories on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Eve O'Day. Continuing our Valentine's theme, we have one of the essay readings from our annual sex issue right now. Hope you enjoy it.
So we have an essay reading by Bridget Chase called 747 Days of Honesty. Here's Bridget.
Do you want to come back to my place? There was a pause that was long enough for me to know the answer. She shook her head politely and told me she should be getting home. But, she added, let's see each other again next week. All was not lost, and I had accomplished my real goal, another date with a fantastic girl. She hopped on a bus, and I hopped in a cab. About 3 minutes into my ride, I got a call. Hey, this is kind of embarrassing, but I think I missed the last SkyTrain, and I don't think there are any buses that will take me all the way home. Could I actually crash at yours? I asked the cab to turn around and met her on the side of the road by Granville Bridge. When we got back to my basement suite, I did the awkward sweeping hand gesture to show her around the living room. This is pretty much it, I said. My roommates are probably asleep. And here's my room. I opened my door and ushered her in. We stood there in silence, staring at my partially unmade bed. The static tension between us hummed lightly in my ears as she sat down and pretended to study the uninteresting knick-knacks scattered across my shelves. I was left wondering what my next move should be. Do you want some pajamas? I asked. She looked down at what she was wearing, deemed it inappropriate to sleep in, and nodded. When I realized that I didn't have anything other than neon yellow boxer shorts, I folded them into a little square to try and present them as formally as possible, alongside an old cotton t-shirt I'd received from some volunteering gig years ago. She stood up to change, and I turned around to give her privacy. With my back to her, I said, I'll sleep on the couch. She let out a huff of offense. I faced her sitting back down in the bed, thin legs looking gangly in the oversized shorts. No, it's your bed. You can sleep here, too. You sure? Yeah, of course. If you want, I can sleep on the couch. What? No, I don't have a problem sleeping in the same bed. I just, it's okay, it's cool. I turned off the light and we both shuffled our way under the covers. I crossed my arms and then realized I was acting like a corpse in a coffin and tried to loosen up. The comforter felt heavy. The body heat radiating off of her gave me chills. The silence lingered, and I could hear both of us thinking about what we were going to do to break it. "Are you warm enough?" I asked. "Why won't you touch me?" she said. Our voices collided as we both spoke, and I realized that we had two different ideas about how the night was going to progress. "What?" I asked. "Yes, I'm warm enough. Do you not want to touch me?" "No. I mean, yes, but I didn't think you wanted me to touch you." "Why would you think that?" "I don't know. I guess I didn't get the vibe. You don't have to touch me, but I want to touch you." "Then touch me." I rolled over and put my hand on her arm. "Sorry. I guess because you said no to coming over originally, I figured that you just needed a place to sleep. I didn't want to overstep any boundaries." "I said no originally, but I do like you a lot," she said. My eyes had adjusted enough within the dark to see the curve of her smile, and even if I hadn't been able to see it, I could hear it in her voice. She touched my shoulder, and I leaned in to kiss her. I cupped her face with my hands. We shifted to a more comfortable position. I looked down at her as things began to heat up. As I slid my hand up her waist, I felt her go still. She was kissing me back, now with less urgency. I stopped. "Hey, do you want to do this?" I asked, pulling back from her face. She looked at me and said yes, but her body language said no. It wasn't particularly hard to tell. She looked nervous, and the hesitancy in her voice took that yes down a notch into maybe status. "Are you sure?" I asked again. "We don't have to go any further than this. I definitely don't want you to feel uncomfortable." The breath of relief that escaped her lips hung between us. "Actually, no. I don't want to go any further right now." She pulled me back down towards her. "But I am enjoying this." I wasn't a mind reader that night. 747 days later, I'm still not a mind reader, and neither is she. 747 days of love with the same girl from that fumbling evening, and we're both still asking questions. "Do you like what I'm doing? Are you comfortable? Do you want me to stop?" During romantic experiences after pancake breakfasts or sloppy sessions after a late night on Davy Street, these are the ways we deepen our intimacy through trust. Questions don't limit us. They allow us to explore possibilities that have made our sexual experiences magnetic and frequent. That feels weird. Take that shit out. Harder. Wait, no, slow down. That's much better. Oh my God, be quiet. We have a roommate. I love you. A lot has changed during the course of our relationship, but our unapologetic honesty hasn't. Checking in, double-checking, and creating room for a person to change their mind are all things that don't stop after a first, second, or thousandth encounter. It's very possible that if we hadn't paused to talk things through on that first night together, I wouldn't be waking up to my girl traipsing around our apartment in those same yellow boxer shorts. They still don't fit her, but because of our continuous communication, we figured out that we do fit each other.
That was Bridget Chase reading her essay titled 747 Days of Honesty. Up next, some PSAs.
Thousands of opinions are at our fingertips, but are all opinions informed? Does your information have a source? Is your social feed based on fact? Only facts can uncover the truth. Professional journalists are committed to balanced and nonpartisan reporting, to independent commentary. They cut through the spin to give you the information and perspective you need. Journalism is essential to democracy, a watchdog over the powerful, an independent voice. Journalism is more important than ever.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is the big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke you every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
September concerts and CITR present pop singer-songwriter from Australia, Betty Hu, on tour to support her latest release, The Valley. Come out Wednesday, February 28th, to see Betty Hu with special guests at the Imperial in Vancouver. Get tickets and more information at timbreconcerts.com.
You're listening to Cult at the UBC, a culture show from the campus newspaper at the University of British Columbia. We're broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam territories on the CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Eve O'Day. Right now, we're going to plug into our segment called TBH, where a panel of UBC staff will speak honestly about the greatest insights they've gleaned from their human experiences, or just rant about something they wish everyone knew. We hope you enjoy it.
Hey, everyone. My name is Alamadio Lanyon, and I'm a staff writer at the UBC, UBC's campus newspaper. Welcome to a Valentine's special segment of our show called TBH. It's the part of the show where we ask an esteemed panel of UBC staff and editors to speak honestly about relationships, love, intimacy, romance, sex. Shout out to Eve for putting up some of these awesome questions. We're a family show, so if you don't want to hear conversations about any of the stuff that I mentioned before, this is probably the last stop for you. So we're going to do a quick round of introductions first. Joining me in the studio, we have Sam Dubois, culture editor at the UBC.
Hey, Ola. How's it going?
It's going good. Nivi Thatra, science editor at the UBC.
Hi, Ola.
And Bridget Chase, a senior staff writer at the UBC.
Hey.
How's everyone doing?
Pretty good. I didn't know we were a family show. Is that a thing?
I also didn't know we were esteemed.
Yeah. We're always esteemed.
I've always known I'm esteemed.
Oh, okay. Good.
Cool. We'll just start off right away. I'll start off easy. First question. Fictional character / celebrity crushes. Let's go. We'll start off with Sam.
Ooh. Timothy Chalamet is currently, I think, my celebrity crush. That boy looks impossibly beautiful.
I think I'm a little bit like on the fence about him.
Really?
Like in Lady Bird, he's kind of a dick, but like in, Call Me By Your Name, Dreamboat. So, I don't know. Bridget?
I think I would have to say, my gosh, this is so stereotypical, but Ellen Page. She's just so cute. She's so such a sweet little human being.
Maybe.
All right, no shame. James Potter and Remus Lupin from Harry Potter.
Nice.
Because ooh, I read a lot of fan fiction in my day.
Yes.
When you say in your day, you mean like yesterday? Sorry, that was a dig. Sorry. Cool. I'm going to go to the next one. I'm going to hit a little bit harder. What's the best piece of advice you've received regarding relationships? I'll start with Nivi.
I think as much as relationships are about two people taking care of each other and supporting each other, the best advice I've always received is you have to be really present and really confident about who you are. Real love and happiness, oh God, bleh, puke, comes from, you know, like inner strength and inner wisdom, and looking for someone else to save you or fix you isn't really doing anyone any good. So that's the best advice I've gotten.
Nice. Bridget?
I think the best advice I've ever gotten was that love is a verb in the sense that it isn't just kind of a magical fairy tale feeling that pops up in your life one day and then everything will just work out. Love actually takes effort, takes a lot of work, and to kind of keep a relationship, maintain it, and keep that love alive, you actually have to put that effort and that work into it. And I think that's a really great thing. It's really fun. It's one of the best parts about love.
Samuel?
Ooh. I think probably to always be improving yourself and always to look for things that you can do better. I think stagnating in a relationship is probably one of the worst things you can do. And feeling like an obligation to constantly evolve as a person, I think, for yourself as much as for the other person, I think was the best advice I've gotten.
Okay. I mean, I guess what I'm hearing a lot about the last question with people and their responses is, to maintain interest, it takes a lot of work, but that work should look like you're actually interested in it and actually is, like, positive and fun. It's not just, like, you're fixing yourself and, like, you're becoming a better person because you have things on your to-do list.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like, no, you're living your life. And
yeah. I think, yeah, it's, like, you're not trying to, like, get, like, a manic pixie dream girl. You're not trying to, like, get a lot of people, I guess, fall in love with this idea of someone and then, like, they don't realize there's a lot of, like, actual, like, relationship infrastructure and a lot of, like, you know, you have to put the concrete, you got to put the cement, you know, you actually have to do the work of, like, laboring, right, like, to actually make things work, right? So I mean, I think that's similar, that's kind of like the answer I think all of you kind of gave, right? So, like, I mean, to some extent, I don't know, like, it was definitely different, but it seems that, like, you all are very learned and versed in the arts. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm just going to go into the next question right away. If anybody else has anything else to say.
Mm-hmm.
No? No? Okay. So, like, what's the most embarrassing intimate moment you've ever had? And it can be with regards to romance or not. It can be sexual or platonic. It can be in any kind of relationship. Like, it doesn't need, like, I use the word or, but, like, there's no or. It's not a binary, right? It's, like, it can be anything, right? So just hit me with your best shot. I'll go with Bridget first, and then we'll do Sam and then Nivy.
The first thing that comes to mind is I went on a first date once, Tinder date, and it was very uncomfortable for everyone involved. Like, no one had a good time. So I thought, at least. I really thought we didn't vibe at all. And then we left the, like, brunch place, and I went in for a hug because I'm like, you know, like, that's a nice way to end a date that, you know, didn't go super well. And the other person went in for, like, a full frontal mouth kiss, and the moment of, like, oh my god, like, how do we navigate this moment, I, like, turned my head and she just put her tongue in my ear. And it was so bad on so many levels, and then we just pulled back and I was like, okay, nice to meet you, and I just ran to the bus stop and then never spoke to her again. It was very uncomfortable. I felt really bad because I think that, yeah, we had two different impressions of how that date went. But she's a really nice girl. I hope you're not listening. sorry.
Oh, man.
I don't know how you can follow up with that at all. I'm sorry. I should have gone with Sam first and then gone with you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was bad.
What have you done?
I know.
I went on a pretty bad date in first year where she wanted to meet at, I think, 8:30 in the morning at Grounds for Coffee.
No. And I
know I should have just said hell no. I'm not gonna
what is wrong with you?
I was just like, oh, okay, sure, whatever. Like, we can do this. That seems like a normal date time. I got a fever the night before, like one of those 24 hours. It was the worst thing ever. I was just lying in bed, hallucinating the whole night. And I wake up at 6 in the morning to get ready for this bloody date, and you know, it's the first floor. It's like, you know, student housing. I'm in the bathroom. The shower is all the wrong temperature. I arrive at this thing. I'm like, this better be the best damn date I've ever had. And we go in. And she, you know, she's dressed very nicely. She looks lovely. And we go in. We sit down and talk for about 15 minutes about normal things. She's at art school and whatnot. And then she turns to me and she says, do you believe in God?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And for those who don't know me, I do not at all. And spent the next 2.5 hours sitting there being lectured to about God, why C.S. Lewis is the best author on the face of the earth, and all these very interesting...
God, like, and Narnia, you know. God,
I mean, C.S. Like, Lewis is the best author on earth, but, like, but okay.
And I remember I was so sick. I was freezing cold. I was like, still, I'm pretty sure. I felt like I must be hallucinating parts of it. And I remember just finally.
Sounds like you need some spiritual guidance in your life.
Right? Yeah.
You say, you're like, I don't believe in hell, but I feel like I'm there right now.
Exactly. I made the mistake of drinking my coffee and eating my cinnamon bun as fast as possible to end the date. And she didn't. And so I was just sitting there with nothing to do, nothing to eat or drink, just waiting to die.
Waiting to die.
It was truly terrible.
That's awful.
Sorry about that. Nubi.
All right. I guess I have two quick stories that are embarrassing. One of them doesn't involve like sexual intimacy, but it does involve physical intimacy. So I just had gotten out of like a really stressful midterm, like one of those where you're just like brain shattering, body shattering. I just screwed my future up. And so I was sitting outside the classroom waiting for one of my friends to come out, and one of my classmates comes out. I've kind of like spoken to her a couple times. Her name is, not going to say her name. And she's like, oh, Nivi, how are you doing? How's a test for you? And she kind of like offers her hand to me as like a gesture of closeness. But I just take her hand, and again, this is someone that I've only spoken to a couple times, and just bring it to my cheek and like let it graze my cheek. And I don't know what I said, but I just felt so weird that I had taken this person's hand and brushed against my cheek.
You did it on purpose?
I don't know why I did that. It just felt like the right moment to bond with this person.
What happened?
It's a very seductive move.
Yeah. I don't know. And then the other story that's very embarrassing is quite recent. So I was two people. I was getting ready to sleep with someone, and we were doing the thing people do, and we were in bed. And then
I have no idea what you're talking about. What are people doing?
the old pump and grind. and then we were at my place, and the guy was like, okay, like, where are the condoms? And I was like, I don't have condoms. I thought you would have condoms. And he was like, I don't have condoms. Do you just expect me to like walk around condoms? And I was like, I don't know. And then so it was just like this conundrum, because yeah, if a person walks around with condoms, are they like trying to get laid all the time, or are they taking care of their sexual health? Mm. And just like that paralyzing question had me in limbo for a while.
How did you resolve that?
I tried to dig through my roommate's entire room to find a condom, and then I tried to run to Shoppers, but the guy was like, don't run to Shoppers, this is fine, we'll be fine. And we were fine. It was a pleasant night.
I feel like getting caught without condoms is one of the worst things that can happen. I know it happens to me way too often. It's just like, I think I would have learned.
I think that says a lot about you. You're the person. Okay, we're good. Wait, what were you about to say?
I was about to say, I feel like people don't talk about how goofy sex can be sometimes.
Yeah, oh, yeah. There's sure. More to that story, because I tried to use the two expired condoms that I did have in my room. So, yeah, just my hands are sweating right now.
Yeah, this is what this is about, you know? Yeah. Like, trying to, like, TBH, to be honest, you know, we're getting to the complexities of, I guess, love, romance, sex. Mm-hmm. Sex. I'm going to edit a lot of this stuff.
Just all my F-bombs.
Just you in the background saying sex so seductively. So frequently.
Okay, I'm going to go to the next question. So how do you ask for consent? Like, how specifically? Like, because when you talk about like consent and everything, like, people are always like, oh, like, you know, you can do it this way or this way, right? But like, how do you in particular ask for consent for like, not just like, I guess, like, again, like, not just sexual relationships, but like just intimacy in general, like mm-hmm. hugging someone, or like, how do you, like, I guess, verbal, nonverbal cues, like, well, what do you do?
For like a hug, I just say, would you like a hug? Although not quite as businesslike as that. And usually that does it for, I'm a huge dork when it comes to sex sometimes, and I'll be like, may I? Or something like that. Would you permit me to get in the bed with you right now? And for some reason, sometimes they say yes when I'm like a huge dork about it. Mm. Or they laugh at me. Which, you know, works too.
I feel like, yeah, being comfortable with being kind of a dork about things often works in your best interest, mm-hmm. you know? Just being able to be like, hey, this is a weird situation. Like, do you want to do this thing? both of us are nervous, you know, being honest and like that. I think most, not maybe not most people, but a lot of people, it's refreshing, right? You don't hear that a lot, right? We see in movies, we see in TV, kind of sex is this like passionate, intense thing that just like happens like that, and there's no talking and people know what to do, right? But we forget sometimes that that's scripted. It's all theater, basically, right? And so it doesn't work like that in real life. But it can be hard to remember that when you are in real life situations. So I think keeping that in mind and just being honest with your partner and being straightforward is not a bad thing. You know, just saying like, hey, do you want to do this thing? Do you feel comfortable with this? That sort of stuff. It can feel kind of like weird at first, but I think once you kind of practice just being really super honest, it gets much easier.
I think for me, it involves a lot of caution and just being able to judge if I have a good rapport with that person. It gets really confusing if you're around someone who, for some reason, you just can't read their body language, or you maybe just have different vocabularies. It's totally okay to take a step back from whatever that relationship is and give it more time, I think. Caution can be not that sexy sometimes, but it served me well.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. And again, I think that partners that you're going to have are going to respect that more. You know what I mean? Creating that space of comfort and being able to be cautious and just be like, hey, I don't think maybe this isn't the right time. I feel like maybe we're not in the right place or whatever. You know, if that partner is going to be worth having, hopefully that sets you up for success, you know, where you get to build that rapport and build that comfort level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and being aware of what my expectations are going in has always been helpful.
Yeah, I really liked your point about like how videos and movies portray it. Yeah. I think that a lot of guys feel a lot of pressure to be cool about it, you know, posture, you know, and portray this very masculine, whatever that is, approach to things. There was some movie I remember where a guy like kept trying to ask for consent in it, but he was being almost so safe about it, like he had a consent form and things like that.
Yeah.
I remember at the time laughing and then thinking about it later and being like, that's actually kind of a really harmful portrayal of what it is to listen and talk to your partner about like what's about to go on. I think honestly it's better to be funny and to kind of just be open with the person than worry about how you're appearing to, you know, be seductive or whatever it is. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm not going to add anything, but I remember just listening to like a podcast with like Larissa Pham and Mary Ichiku Choi. It's called Hey Cool Job. Anyways, besides the point. The point is they're talking in the podcast about how kind of how we've kind of gamified sex and stuff, and how like a lot of people see it as like kind of like more like a status thing, and like, oh yeah, I have sex, you know, and like, right, so we're not really having like, I guess, enthusiastic sex, right? We're not actually like doing it because we want to. So like some situations, like a guy might not even like be super into it as well, and and so like it's just like it just really just screws up the entire system of like, oh, like how do you ask for sex? Like if you're always posturing all the time because you want to like seem cool all the time rather than like having sex because you want to, like it's a big problem as well. I don't know if that makes any sense. What do you think?
I think it'd probably make you much less considerate just in general. Like even if you do get consent, not necessarily making sure that they are enjoying it to the full potential.
Exactly.
Like making sure that you're listening to them and not just having sex for your own pleasure.
Definitely. Consent, a lot of times when we talk about consent, it seems like it's kind of like the thing that you do before sex starts, and then it's like, do you want to do this? Great. Okay, now we're just going to do it, right? But I think part of a very important part of consent is checking in consistently throughout, right? And saying like, hey, are you enjoying what's happening right now?
It goes back to what you were saying about love being a verb. It like doesn't stop.
And it will make your sex life better, right? People think that consent is just kind of like weird regulation of like, I must get this and then I can have sex, but like consent is actually a big part of having good sex, I would say. Not only because obviously it, you know, makes things legally consensual, but also, you know, being able to check in and talk about what your partner likes and what you like and, you know, things that you can enjoy together, will enhance that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Okay, so I'm going to hit you with another big question. It's not really a big question. It's an important question. So sexual health, right?
Mm-hmm.
We kind of like laughed a little bit about this, I think, earlier, and I'm not sure, but a lot of kids out there they're playing a lot of dangerous games because they don't want to, I guess, spoil the moment, and they think asking about sexual health is unsexy and stuff. I sound old because I'm like, oh, kids, you should like check your sexual health and stuff, or like get off my lawn. But like, really, like in reality, like the statistics are like 1 in 2 sexually active people like will contract an STI by 25. Right? That's a very, very harrowing statistic. Right? Yikes. How do we talk about sexual health and getting tested and STIs without sounding like killjoys?
I don't know if you can do it without sounding like a killjoy. I think you just need to be very serious with that sort of thing. I don't know. When I was a teenager, I could smell when someone was trying to package something I didn't like or just like, which I didn't want to hear in a very friendly, playful way. And even if it's, I think you just need to be very candid with teenagers and just say, look, we're not kidding around. Just do it.
Yeah, I mean, we're at a place, I think, right now where it's really hard to get this message across only because we're so saturated by media that doesn't show it happening, mm-hmm. right? So, like, again, there's never, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've never seen a movie or a TV show where, like, two people are about to have sex and then all of a sudden they stop and they're like, hey, yeah. Have you gotten an STI test recently? Like, we should go together. We should get tested before we have sex. Like, that doesn't happen, right? Mm-hmm. And that makes people think that it doesn't happen in real life. Which it does, and it should. I agree. I think that it's not really something that you can kind of, you know, when you're trying to talk to young people about this kind of topic, it's not something you can really, like, make a joke of. It's kind of the same thing as consent. Like, it's just, it's a situation where people need to know, like, this has to be done. And, like, it doesn't have to be so serious in the sense of, you know, when you're with a partner, it doesn't have to be like a serious, like, wait, pause, like, hold on, we must go get tested right now. Like, it can also just be a conversation of like, hey, like, have you been tested? Maybe we should go together. Like, maybe we should, I don't know, hold off on things. Sometimes it seems like really dramatic or intense or like, you know, you're, I don't know, stopping the passionate moment, but it's just kind of a part of life.
Yeah.
I
normalizing the whole conversation mm-hmm. really speaks to me. And I think something that I've noticed is just bringing the conversation out of the whole only talking about STIs and STDs with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I talk about it all the time with my roommate, and like when we go and get tested, where she knows what's up, I know what's up. Like, it's just a normal thing that we're doing. And with my brother, who's 10 years younger than me, I've tried to really normalize the conversation as well. Like, last time I was talking about STDs and STI with my partner, I was actually at a football game with my brother and was talking about sexual health histories with my partner on Messenger. And my brother kind of like leans over my shoulder and he's like, hey, like, what are you talking about? And I was like, we're talking about STDs and STIs. And and just letting him know that this is a conversation you can have, and it's normal and fine. My brother's not sexually active, but he will be. So,
yeah, yeah. I think it's not the problem that they don't know how to talk about it in a way that's accessible. It's more that most people just don't talk about it at all. I mean, I came from a pretty rural area where a lot of people were sexually active, but no one really knew what they were doing. And a teacher would sort of say, always use protection, but stop after saying that and not elaborate. So you're like, what types of protection are there?
People just wearing, like, condoms in their heads.
Yeah. Yeah, like, no one knew. And the teachers didn't want to talk about it, and they weren't getting paid enough to talk about it, really. And so it just, I think that's really the problem, is that no one really knows how to normalize it, as you both were saying.
I think there's also just a lack of information for people of all ages, but especially young people, about how STIs actually work, like how they are transmitted. Yeah, there's a lot of misinformation about how STIs are actually can be spread or contracted. And I think a lot of people just think like, oh, penis, vagina, if I wear a condom, there's no way that I'll get an STI. But like, you know, sex doesn't always involve just those two
exactly.
body right. parts, mm-hmm. right? And there's different ways, different STIs can transmit with a combination of different yeah. body parts. So like, yeah, just information about that is really important. I think that that's kind of a big topic issue that yeah. needs to be touched on. Yeah.
That and birth control as well.
Definitely.
Oh yeah, contraception. Yeah, I should probably have asked that, but...
We're there.
Yeah, I guess who wants to like kind of like talk about that a little bit?
I only knew about the condom and the pill until Moira wrote her feature for the UBC. I'm ashamed to say no one, like, there was no education on it at all. And I kind of, like, in a daze came through life and read this article. And I was like, what on earth are these things? Mm-hmm. Where have these been the whole time? And I was kind of surprised but also phenomenally disappointed, I think, by the Ontario School Board.
Oh, I thought you were like, yeah. I'm so disappointed in this contraception, you know?
Yeah. It's, oh, man.
How dare they?
These IUDs, what's the deal with those?
I think for something to acknowledge for female-identifying folks is birth control does have an effect on not just your sexual health, but your mental health as mm-hmm. well. Like, hormones are not... Man, we don't know anything about how they work, really, and I am your science editor.
I was going to say, tell me how science works. What's that all about?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, hormones, there's so little research. There's so much effect that hormones can have on your memory, on kind of your emotional landscape. For a lot of women, birth control is not just about sex, it's about their entire lives, and we just need to respect that and open up the floor. If people want to say things like, hey, I just got off the pill last week and I feel really depressed today and my boobs are smaller or they're bigger and it hurts, I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely affects a lot of things. People take birth control as medication.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Which I think is another thing that isn't talked about often.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I used to.
Yeah.
And it really kind of screwed up a lot of my body's ability to function. So I just stopped taking birth control. It wasn't the right contraceptive method for me.
Hmm. Okay. First of all, so we know that your brain can kind of convince you that, so basically, like, your brain can convince you that you're in love, and also, like, your brain can convince you that you're not in love as well. And you can disagree with this basic premise a little bit. Like, you might not even believe, like, love exists, right? But how do you know if a person, you actually love a person, and, like, if the person is, I guess, the one for you, whether, like, in a relationship or, like, in, like, romantic settings or platonic settings, or how do you know?
Hit us with that science.
I'm actually... not going to hit you with the science. I'm not going to hit you with the science, if that's okay. I think the words that we use for, like, falling in love and love and, like, intense, like, get really, really confused when we talk about these things. And yeah, like, your brain can convince you that you're in love, but what does that mean? Like, is a person separate from their brain, and is, like, Freud's ego separate from the brain, and what is the... It just gets all very, very confusing, but...
Keep going.
but for me, what it comes down to is, I think love you can feel for many people, and even just a stranger, you can feel a sort of tenderness for strangers. And the actual act of, like, falling in love and that intense sort of lust thing that your brain, like, convinces you that it's happening is an intense liking. And for me, I'm just comfortable with the idea that when I'm in love with someone, it's an intense liking. And love is actually a feeling that I associate with my family and the way that I feel about the world and, like, harmony and you know, everything's connected, all those things. So... yeah, I think you know really, I know really well, like, when I intensely like someone, like, when our interests align and we're just able to talk until, like, infinity comes out through our mouths. So
that was poetic.
Okay. Very, that was very beautiful. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Are you a
well
writer,
said.
You don't say.
Bridget or Sam?
Okay. I agree with that a lot. I think it's not really a singular thing to love someone. I think it depends on a lot of different things, like having aligned interests or just like fitting somehow seamlessly fitting together a bunch of criteria that I think you need to get along with someone. I also just think you kind of know it when it's there. I've never like deliberated about it. I've always just been like, oh, okay, I guess that's what is happening right now.
I definitely agree with both of you. I also think that love, I feel like you can be in love in different ways, you know, like one relationship, your feeling towards them might be very different than another relationship, but it doesn't mean that one is better than the other, or like that, you know, one love, one type of love or one feeling of love is better than the other. I think, yeah, you just kind of know when you know.
Yeah. It's hard to ask other people, and sometimes it's hard to ask other people what love is, and sometimes it's hard to trust someone else when they say that I was in love with you or I am in love with you. That trust component is huge.
I feel like there's a lot of fear too about unreciprocated love. Yeah. I think that's like people think that it's a really horrible thing when you are in a relationship and you say that you might say that you love them and then they don't say it back. I think that's kind of ridiculous drama in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's completely fine for someone to reach that point first and not necessarily get it right away. I think it's almost an unreasonable expectation, and it puts so much pressure and expectation on you and your partner, which can be phenomenally unhealthy, I think.
Yeah, no, I definitely. I feel like that's just another kind of thing that movies and media has taught us, right? That, like, you fall in love at the same time and you both realize it under the stars in the rain. Yeah, it's like, that's not the way it always goes.
Yeah. You climax together, too.
Yes. Okay, so we're just going to go for, like, I guess, final thing. You all have the floor. Is there anything you want to say before you go off? Any, like, inside observation? What's, like, the one thing that you want to tell everyone right now and you wish that everybody could talk about right now?
Always reciprocate oral sex. It should be, like, tattooed onto many, many people.
Tattooed where, though? Like, on my back, I can't see.
Wherever they're going to remember. They're going to remember. I think, like...
It's, like, on your eyeballs? I don't know, like, or, like, your eyelids? I don't know. Like,
somewhere. I've heard so many people complain about guys mainly just, like, kind of getting what they wanted and then just being like, oh, okay, I'm going to sleep now or I'm going to check my phone or something. It's like, no, come on. You, like, sex is all about a kind of a shared experience and shared enjoyment. I think that if, apparently this is a huge problem with guys, if you're not making sure that both of you kind of end happy and enjoying the experience, you're not really being very considerate. And I think, yeah, it should just be a good ground rule. There are very few legitimate excuses for not reciprocating oral sex, I think.
I think what I want to say, especially for marginalized folks, is raise your expectations. It's totally okay. I just want people to ask for what they want. Mm. Figure out what you want. Ask for it without any shame. Just really calm down. Maybe not calm down, but like kind of settle your emotions and ask for what you want and be really strong about it and don't try not to feel any shame for asking for that. I think that's super important. There are a lot of people just walking around taking up space and we can do that too.
I would say, not to loop back into the theme here, but honesty is the best policy. Really, honesty is always the best. Just be honest about things, about what you want, about what you need, about how you're feeling. My kind of motto is any partner that's going to be worth having is going to appreciate your honesty about things. You know, and it's be if being honest is only going to strengthen your relationship. And if it doesn't, then my bad. but maybe that relationship has some things that the two people need to work through, right? Honesty, if honesty opens up can of worms, then that might be a can of worms that you need to kind of go through. Sorry, that was a weird metaphor.
Do I have to eat it?
No. That was a really weird metaphor. I'm sorry. I hope that made sense.
On that note, yeah. I think I've exhausted all my questions. Thank you all for coming through. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
That was Sam Dubois, Nivi Tatra, and Bridget Chase on our segment TBH, where they speak candidly about insights they've gleaned from their human experiences. The panel was moderated by Olamide Olanian, staff writer at the UBC. To tie things up, we're going to have one more reading from the sex issue, an essay titled To Connect. Hope you like it.
We have a mini essay reading by Rosemary Sienhe. The name of the essay is called To Connect.
How do we sometimes fall so, so quick? There was someone from early August in Dalian. We met at a bank, me taking out money from the bank account my parents had set aside for me in China, and him depositing money he had made from his work at the naval base. We had just under 2 weeks together. Little fractures of every other day were spent together by the sea or by the square or buying groceries. After all, he was there for his military training for the Benin Army, and I was there to care for Grandma. One of our last conversations centered around how people would exit the elevator when they saw the color of his skin as he stepped on. A man yelled at us on one of our last walks together. He was shouting at me for holding hands on the street with a man with the softest, most electrifying skin I had ever touched. And then there's the man who always seems to be in a different city. We do similar research on indigenous language preservation, though he is eons ahead of me in intellect and academic accomplishments. He just finished submitting his applications for his PhD. The curls on his head are sometimes loud, but he is a quiet man. I don't know why he is so generous in allowing me to frantically fill up our silences. The geographical spaces that separate our physical bodies are made up in part by exchanges of pieces of poetry and photographs and check-ins on what the other person ate for dinner and, are you sleeping okay? And then there is a stubborn and stubbly boy from Stuttgart from 2 summers ago. The language barrier proved to be evident as he took a hairdryer out of the bathroom cabinet when I asked for a hair elastic. It was a deeply intense and therefore sometimes unstable feeling kind of closeness. The closeness with that boy with a last name too long for me to hold with even both of my hands. What does this all mean? I have moved past kicking myself for falling for people too quickly. I think it is just a foundational part of who I am. I have decided it is okay to have bits of my too big heart in different corners of this world. I think we all do.
That's the show for the week. Thanks to Sam McCabe, Kate Cohenbrander, Sam Dubois, Nivi Tatra, Bridget Chase, Rosemary Sienhe, and Emma Hicks for coming on the show. The music for this episode was New York Minute Prayer by Shilpa Ray from the Free Music Archive. If you missed part of the show or just want to check out other episodes, you can find our podcast on CITR.ca. Don't miss us too much. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I'm Eve O'Day. Stay lovely, everyone.
I still believe, like a sycophant, like an idiot. This is my new year.